we're building for like the next generation, right? I have like a very strong conviction that majority of kids growing up after this cycle will have a MetaMask before they have a bank account, right? And I think that's dope as fuck.
Hi everyone, I'm Kitsune.
And I'm V.
And joining us this week, 0x Sammy.
We talk about a lot of different topics, from governance and onboarding people,
to finding your niche when you're branding your product and how do we attract institutional capital? And then, is that even worth it?
If you like the show, like and subscribe and give us a rating.
And as always, if you have a story that you want to share, please reach out to us because we'd love to have you. And now, here's Sammy.
Let's start with the username. Let's go with
Yeah. What's the origin behind the username?
Oh, well, it's Sammy.
The thing is, my name is actually Sammy, so I don't have like the best, like, you know, some people have like such cool usernames and then they're like, oh, like this is really cool, blah blah blah, and I'm like, oh yeah, my name is Sammy, and then I do crypto stuff, so I have 0x there.
That is the, I think aside from Lawrence, that's the first time we've had someone give that answer. Which was, I mean, funny to be like, so Lawrence, where's your name from? And he's like, I don't know, God, like my parents, like whatever. So it's it's like refreshing to have someone else who's like, yeah, it's actually, that one's actually just my name. Well, I mean, you know, I guess then like, since the name is like not a mystery now, I guess check that one off. We solved one mystery, you know. And in as much detail, as little detail as you want to go into, like, you know, if you want to share your origin story of how you got into crypto with us, like, what was your path to arrive here?
Yeah, totally. So I guess, like, I've been in the crypto space for, like, a few years now. Originally, I was doing econ at York, which is, like, a university, like, here in Toronto. And when I was there, it was, like, my first year. And they introduced this like blockchain development program at one of like the local colleges. And I just thought it was so dope. And like, you know, usually like postgrads and stuff, you have to have an undergrad to get into them, right? But I was lucky enough where like ETH was worth $200 and no one wanted to go to this program. Crypto was dead. Everyone thought it was lame. And I managed to like get in. And I did that program, and then from there I met like a couple of the people who helped with the curriculum or were teaching and stuff like that, and I got like, you know, a couple intern gigs. And it really, you know, some people, I think like people have cooler stories where like they were in TradFi or something and then they got introduced to crypto, but for me it's one of those things where it's just been like my whole life, even before work, like for school it's been everything I've ever done.
I mean, that is, you know, a cool, or I mean, there's something to be said, right, for being the person when everyone else is like, this is dead, it's not happening, this whole thing is fake, this was a flash in the pan, to be like, you know what, actually, I do think like I am the person to just like go for it, to like leap for it. Like, was that kind of like a liberating experience? Was that like a profound moment for you of being like, you know what, fuck it, I will take the risk.
Yeah, but it was super interesting because I think when I decided to jump into it, I mean, 2017, I experimented, right? I experimented with things, but I think before I like really decided like this is what I want to do, I was one of those people who thought like crypto is going to fix everything, right? Like the blockchain is going to fix everything. And I went into the program sort of thinking that, right? And it wasn't until later in the program that I like really sort of found like what I think is like crypto's like true utility, which is like, you know, I guess like more on the financial side and some identity stuff as well, right? And yeah, I mean, I don't know if I thought of it like that. I think for me, it was more just there's economics was so boring. And also, I wasn't smart enough to get into computer science when I wanted to go to university. So, you know, crypto is always this like, you know, cool intersection between econ and comp sci.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely I can relate to the idea of like when I first got into crypto, I was like, I am just not smart enough to do computer science or to do any like coding things or things like that. And which seems like the most daunting part of the process, like certainly when you are first like starting out and certainly when the space is so new and so nascent, it does kind of feel like, man, if you can't do, you know, computer science, like if you're not some either like cryptographer or programmer or heavy comp sci nerd, it's like, you know, the barrier to entry seems so high.
Totally. And I, you know, for me, I haven't touched even something like Remix in years now, right? Almost since I got into the space. Obviously, like I learned it before, like in that program. But just the way I went about working in the space or diving into the space, like I never sort of applied myself on the developer side. And the other day I was trying to make a TCR, like a token curated registry for all these projects that got like DNS spoofed, create this token curated registry and then try and stuff it up consensus to like integrate into MetaMask so that they can do on-chain like verification of like the addresses. Anyways, I thought it was the coolest idea. And I tried making a TCR, which is like a very simple smart contract, and I couldn't even do it. And then I realized I'm like, damn, like I've basically gone this whole time, you know, with understanding for the technicals, but like haven't really applied myself there at all, right? And that's what I try and tell people too, right? Is, you know, you don't have to, you really don't have to know the technicals as much as you think you do when you jump into crypto.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said too for like a kind of like baseline level of optimism in the sense of you look at something like crypto and, you know, you think I'm not smart enough. I don't know anything about cryptography or computer science, but coming back to it and then being like, well, this is a potential to revolutionize finance and so many other industries. So I'll stick with it, even if I'm not smart enough. I feel like that's kind of a mindset that quite a few people have, non-technical people have when trying to enter the space.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's hard to, I think there should always be basic understanding of how blocks work. I guess like, you know, like the very simple things, right? But you know, it's not too different from any other industry, right? Like you have to understand the bare minimums of at least on the technical level of basically every other industry. And maybe with crypto it's a bit more daunting because it is a bit more like technically advanced, but I think, you know, on my project there's a bunch of people who don't know the first thing about, you know, the technical side, and they've been a great help, right? And then I think when like the NFT wave stuff sort of came about, like that was like a huge opening door for like a lot of people, right? Because as long as someone could spin up like an IPFS or something, right, then, you know, you can get started on that, right? Like you don't necessarily have to go down the DeFi route, which is a bit more like advanced, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that point that there is, you have to have some like baseline level of fluency. And that's right, like that's across any industry. That's like across anything, is you have to be able to speak the language to a certain point, which I think is kind of a blessing and a curse in crypto, a blessing in the sense of like, you can pretty much immediately tell who's in it for like a grift or who is, you know, TradFi, who's coming in, who has, you know, a baseline, no idea what the fuck they're talking about. But I also think, you know, that is like a place where our industry and space is heading right now, where enough awareness, like you said, either through the NFT boom or whatever, like people go, okay, I maybe don't have to be a shadowy super coder to be able to contribute. Like there are many valid ways for people to contribute. But yeah, certainly as like a first, I don't know, like a first wall to jump over, particularly back in the 2010s, I feel like it was just, that was such a big blocker for so many people.
And it hasn't changed, right? If anything, it's gotten more complicated, right? With the introduction of layer twos, and then you have different blockchains with different compilers. And if anything, it's gotten more complex. But I think people have, I guess, you know, learned their lessons in terms of onboarding and stuff, and have tried to make things a bit simpler for people. It's definitely like shown, right? With like the last cycle, or with like the most latest cycle, it was definitely evident that, you know, it was much easier to onboard people that were not so technical, which you would assume from like 2013 to 2017 to now, like the next cycle will people be like, you know, building even more education tools and making it even easier for people.
It's almost kind of like a catch 22 of sorts, in the sense of now that there's, as you say, there's more layer twos, different blockchains, everything. There's more opportunity, especially for non-technical people. Like there are more opportunities than ever. If you look at like all the Web3 job boards and such for people, for non-developers. But then it's just overwhelming. Like, well, where do I go? Where do I start? It's a dual-edged sword of sorts.
It's I talked about this somewhere else before. I always thought like crypto had the most interesting like growth mechanic ever. You know, other companies would incentivize people to sort of try out their platform by like referral codes or something like that, right? And I think there's a bunch of different ways that people are experimenting with to onboard new users onto their platform. I think like airdrops has been like one of the most like fascinating ones, right? Like I know a ton of people that were not in crypto until recently that only got on board because of something like the Uniswap airdrop. And then they heard that, like, you know, they were getting free money for just trying things. All of a sudden you start trying all the bridges and the DEXs and everything, and you were airdrop farming. But at the same time, like now you're technically competent to like, you know, be on chain and not have to use like a centralized exchange and stuff, right? And then that brought on like a whole bunch of people, right? Because they were just incentivized through different mechanics, not only airdrops, to sort of participate on chain, and that, you know, like introduced them to like a ton of like cool new projects, right?
I think, and we certainly saw that airdrop traction, you know, with Solana Summer, and then more recently with the Cosmos ecosystem, like, you know, kind of part of the whole hype behind Cope, RIP, was that, you know, like the idea of you could, you know, basically sign up and incentivize these airdrops across platforms. And did almost all of those Sol alts go to zero? Absolutely. But yeah, I think in terms of, you know, particularly younger people who maybe don't have streams of income, or don't have a lot of money, the idea of like, well, I can familiarize myself with this ecosystem, technically kind of get paid to do it. And then I lose very little. If I lose, I don't lose any of my own money. And if I, you know, again, if I get one of those airdrops, that ends up being very valuable.
And then that created a flywheel in and of itself, right? Where yeah, now you have new money coming in, which you can use to experiment and just go deeper down the rabbit hole, right?
Yeah. I mean, there is something seductive to it. You know, the very first, you know, like, four figure airdrop that I ever got, I was like, this is the craziest shit that's ever happened to me. And I said, you know, I'm sure that feeling is carried out across the board on a lot of people. And, you know, in terms of like a call it a referral or marketing gimmick, you could really ask for, you couldn't ask for anything better, right? Like the idea that log on, play with our stuff, and you get something that might be worth at least something. And yeah, I think, you know, as an extension of that, the the NFT whitelisting, you know, kind of frenzy that happened at the top of the NFT market, probably was the same thing. People all of a sudden were learning about, you know, how to self-custody these things, how to join Discords and hunt for the next big project, how to list things on OpenSea, how to flip. I'm sure that, you know, if we want to identify this last bull run with a narrative, I really think the NFT narrative in terms of globalizing crypto was probably the biggest. I don't think it's going to be for the next one. I would love to know what it is, but I certainly think if we look back in the history of crypto, it will be like the last few years was like, yeah, NFTs, I mean, what do changed you think, it.
What do you think could like cultivate like an onboarding wave like that? To me, like, I think NFTs, BSC was a huge one, right? BSC yeah. was like really like the first scalable EVM chain, right? I mean, there was Matic and stuff. But like, it was the first one that was like sort of introduced to retail, right? That sort of like led in a bunch of people that were sort of priced out of mainnet. And then, yeah, I think like the NFTs like followed that. Like, what do you think could be like another one?
It's weird because I'm going to like split the answer, and both of them I feel like are non-obvious in a way that makes me feel like they might be right. I think one of the first ones is going to be like retail-based transactional services. I think like the ability, I think, you know, basically as soon as somebody has the ability or understands how fast money can move compared to traditional fiat rails like wire payments or ACH or even credit card payments, I think as soon as like people find, or someone, you know, it's probably going to be Cash App, rolls out a truly seamless way with Apple Pay or whatever, where you are spending your crypto balance and things are settling instantaneously and there's no like arduous instructional process, I think that will get a lot of people into crypto, particularly if there is going to be interest rates, you know, on those, where people can at least have the idea of passively holding, even though now, as we've seen, like BlockFi, that all blows up. And then this one is kind of smaller, but I actually think this may be more impactful. I think it's going to be more and more people leaving office jobs, desk jobs, like non-rewarding retail jobs, and finding jobs in Web3. And I think that ripple effect of people all of a sudden making more money than they were before, largely working from home, getting access to all of this information, I don't think that just affects those people. I think it affects their families and their friends, and that it makes kind of this, you know, like, oh, well, if someone is earning money, there's something to be here. So I think it will be, you know, quieter. It definitely won't be like a bunch of, you know, like quirked up 23-year-old frat boys showing off their, you know, like horrendous million-dollar NFTs. I think it would be something more impactful.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of on the same path as you. I think it's going to be a bit more indirect than like something revolutionary like a BSC. You know, for what it's worth, like BSC was not revolutionary tech, but the movement it sort of created was revolutionary. I sort of agree with you. I think there's like a ton of projects raising, and not only raising, but also like building around sort of like DAO infrastructure and making it super simple for people to like not only come in on the user side, right? But not that I think that there's like a plethora of users. There's not, definitely like we need more users. But I think like one thing that's like really holding everyone back is like actually the amount of contributors, right? On the other side, like people building stuff. And, you know, there's a ton of shitcoins, right? But at the same time, it's hard for you to create good incentivization loops within a DAO. And it's really hard for you to, like, retain talent. And at the same time, when you really get into it, you don't have things like benefits. It's unclear how it works on, like, the tax level, all these different things, right? It's hard to, like, gain payments. It's hard to be a contributor, right? Like, if you want to work in crypto right now, like, it's not a viable replacement if you have like a family to support or something, right? And I think that will sort of like kick off like the next wave of like bringing people in. Like, yeah, I think like this one was like really good with like bringing users in, but I think like the next one will be like really dependent on bringing more contributors in.
I kind of want to play devil's advocate for a second, and because there have been a couple of examples of things that I don't know that I would say put the industry in a negative light, but just bring more thoughts to like governance and incentivization and that type of thing. The first one I would say being the concept of, you know, I think we're seeing a tiny bit of growing not necessarily backlash, but questioning of like, does your token really need to launch, or does your protocol really need to launch a token like airdrops? You're questioning whether airdrops are the most effective method of bringing people on. And I don't know if you could make the case that that illustrates just a selfish nature of people in general. I mean, I think back to, I think the Ukraine, when there was the addresses for donating to the war efforts for Ukraine, and they announced an airdrop, and the donations just exploded. And it's like, okay, are people really donating for the cause, or are they donating just for their own financial incentive? Like, what's happening there? That's just one example.
Any of us had an idea on what the future of tokenomics and incentives looks like, I think we'd all be like very rich, right? it's not like a very easy thing to work around, right? Like, all we do have that's like very clear is like, you know, how do we get more people into the space, right? And that's why I sort of like allude to that being like a very obvious thing that like we can all do as an industry, right? Like, we can all work towards to sort of like maybe even bring in the person that does have that next revolutionary idea on how to like incentivize people without making it such a Ponzi, right?
You know, just to like go back to what you said about it's hard to be a contributor, like, you know, coming from the corporate world, but also having been in crypto for a long time, like that gap, I think, is still there and is still wide, but I think it is lessening. You know, we're seeing more and more DAOs, and this is not, you know, any type of personal plug, but like some of the work we're doing at Umami, a lot of DAOs that are following like different legal frameworks that are now enabling them to like get banks or, you know, operate out of an actual entity. We're seeing on-chain solutions for like tax reporting. You know, we're seeing new payroll solutions. I'm sure there is some like nightmare VC bro out there right now saying the sentence, putting benefits on chain. And for good or bad, I think that will happen. But yeah, I mean, I think there's the leap, you know, you could be a high five figures, low six figures worker in corporate America, get a great job offer in crypto. And then when you actually do the math on like, well, wait a minute, taxes, benefits, insurance, you know, all of these other things, I get PTO, whatever, parental leave. I think that math becomes a lot harder for people. And I don't think that's necessarily like the fault of DAOs, because, you know, a DAO or an on-chain protocol is just trying to put up a certain amount of money to make a job appealing. I think it is one of those things that the industry needs to mature on, is go, well, not everybody here is like a solely existing on-chain, you know, very young person with no material attachments who's probably not going to pay taxes. Like, you know, a bunch of people are like, you know, are like me. We're like 30 and boomer by those standards, and have like, you know, a family and want and need those benefits. So I think you're totally right on that gap is still there. I would just be so surprised if that gap does not get closed like rapidly over the next 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, as like someone who also like works for like a DAO, like I think it is so far behind, right? Like, we haven't been able to properly onboard someone that is like coming directly from like the Web2 space, right? I think everyone, and I'm sure Umami is like this too, right? I think it's like trying to convince someone or trying to bring someone over from like a fan company, for example, is impossible, not because they don't believe in Web3. It's impossible because like the security is like not there, right? Like, the job security is not there. There's no, and there is like, you know, like I'm sure if you look hard enough, open law or something, like there's contracts and stuff like that, right? But I don't know. I think there has to be like a big shift also like across the globe, sort of moving towards like more contract-based work. I think like that will really help, right? People who are not looking for full-time jobs, but it's a question, right? It's nothing's really guaranteed, right?
Yeah, I think, and you know, it's a funny point raising open law, because I spent a lot of time in open law working on things. And like, yeah, I think there's also that kind of like, there's a cultural shift element that people, you know, get very used to like the workflow centric nanny state that is Slack, or that is like a corporate CRM or anything like that. And then going into like, you know, a DAO, Discord or Telegram, or trying to follow jobs on a bounty board, or trying to make sense of, you know, a fundamentally decentralized system. I imagine that's like, you know, there's also probably people who, when they get to that step, throw up their hands in the air and are like, well, you know, fuck it, I don't want to do this. It was actually much easier when I had a, you know, a project manager giving me a stand up every day and I just check these lists instead of kind of having to have this, you know, self-directed autonomy that is, I get, is, you know, probably not for everybody.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
Definitely speaking here as someone who struggles without some form of structure. I mean,
you must hate doing this podcast then.
Well, it's one of those, like, I think some people do have to admit, and I realized early on, it's like, I'm perfectly okay being a cog in the machine to some extent, or being the worker bee. Like, that's just a bit of a personal thing, having experience being pushed into kind of management or those types of positions and failing horribly. So,
yeah, I think there's a fit for those too, right? Like, we definitely need more of those people also, right? But then the question arises of, in such like an immature industry, do we need even more thinkers, right? I think everyone in a DAO right now is tasked with being a developer and a strategist, and someone else is a marketer and a strategist. So everyone is sort of like doing their roles, but it's comes with this weird unsaid thing of like everyone has to bring something to the table, right? In terms of like how we progress, not only as a protocol, but also move the space forward and differentiate ourselves, right? And I think that was like that's like a really big obstacle for a lot of people who try to get into the space.
That's, you know, that's like a point I wrote about this a while ago. I'd love to kind of get your take on it, you know, from your experience. Like, you know, I wrote a while ago that, you know, our entity might be decentralized, but our planning and execution cannot. And I feel like a lot of stumbling points for DAOs or on-chain entities, protocols, whatever you want to call them, like a lot of them run into this issue where, you know, they everyone, like you said, is doing these multitask roles or is like some genius visionary. Very few people are willing to kind of do the connective tissue, the tendon work of like operations or administration or note keeping or schedule keeping or, you know, HR, any of these things that kind of seem fundamentally unglamorous. Like, do you think that's something we have to get over? Like, have you seen kind of the pitfalls of that in your journey?
Podcast transcribing, you know.
<I'm sorry.
laughs> No, it's fine.
It's been an uphill battle, definitely, when it comes to that stuff. I think I definitely agree with you, right? Like, I think when we had this sort of conversation, right, and realized like this is no way to sort of operate, you know, even if you don't want to call things a business, right, if you abstract away a lot of things, if you're building like a DeFi project, you're building a code base of sorts, right? And if you think about it just from that perspective, in the same way, that's no way to build a code base, right? It's sort of just have everyone, you know, strategizing and working on different things. And, you know, and then you add the factor of like, there's no in real life, there's nothing happening face to face. Then all those issues that you just mentioned become even harder, right? because then all of a sudden you join a project and HR is in like Asia or something, and then you never even talk to them, right? If you're lucky enough to like find someone who's willing to do HR, right? And I think the approach we took, or just the way we thought actually is the most sustainable way of growing our protocol, is doing sort of these strategy sessions and stuff and coming up with what we think are the key building blocks, or, and, you know, people like to call them money Legos, that we introduce to the world, and then striving towards a goal that we can all agree upon, which is like immutability, right? And that's something that people like really don't think about. I think everyone is always like work, think, like, what is the next thing we put out? How do we keep growing this? How do we keep scaling this? And to me, like, the answer for a lot of projects, I know my project for sure, is actually, we all know what we're striving towards is reaching a state of immutability, right? So making our contracts and our protocol as permissionless as possible, as composable as possible, making it as easy for anyone to integrate as possible. And then you don't have some of those like issues that you mentioned before, right? because you know at the end the goal is to sort of like dissolve the foundation and let things sort of like live in the world as they should be, right? And you don't have to necessarily worry about upgrades and stuff like that. You don't have to keep working away at things. And then you know, you have all these building blocks out there. Like, I hope someone is like thinking along these lines for something like an accounting tool or, you know, operations and stuff. But then it just opens up even more room for you to keep building and keep introducing things to the world. If we don't just get stuck on certain ideas or a certain ideology that we have to keep on improving what we've put out there, right? People hate like Andre Crony, right? Like, because he quote unquote like rugged solidly and stuff, right? But it was actually like a great idea that, like, you know, you have like a fully immutable DEX, like there's no more upgrades, and once it's out there, right? And it's something for people to, like, you know, collaboratively work on, right? You don't necessarily have to run a whole DAO for everything, right? I think there's room for tokens, right? Like, there definitely is room for tokens in these systems, but do they have to be constantly maintained and upgraded? Like, I don't think so, right? And I think it's like a really bad feedback loop that we actually, as an industry, like put ourselves into, right? This idea that, like, if you have a token, you have to have a DAO, and you have to push out two governance proposals a month or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's also some, you know, there's like a very real world example there, which is like during the pandemic, all over the country, people in states started hiring retired programmers because they were the only ones who knew how to use the state's unemployment systems, which had never been upgraded. And so, like, the idea of like making something and releasing it into the wild is so antithetical to that, right? Like, we look at these systems that we use constantly in real life that are theoretically maybe being maintained, but otherwise you have to go find some poor motherfucker who retired in the 80s to go and upgrade the code. But like, that idea on Web3, on crypto is so different, right? Like, that you can achieve this point where you can kind of put your hands up in the air and you go, my work tinkering with this is done. I've taken it this far, and now it can kind of exist as its own thing in the world, which is really beautiful. And I also think probably one of the big reasons why, you know, not to put my tinfoil hat on, but like why crypto is so concerning to so many legacy institutions, because the idea of having a system that no one controls, that is egalitarian and permissionless and self-sustaining, is like really probably very shocking and jarring to the people who, you know, want some level of control. So I think it's like a noble aspiration.
Yeah, and in many ways, like, Bitcoin is like this, right? Bitcoin is not immutable. There's definitely a path for people to change. It happens all the time, actually, right? Like, Taproot, so many things with Bitcoin. Like, there is changes that get made to Bitcoin, right? If there's no, like, there's no governance token, but if the nodes agree to it, you guys know how it works, right? And, you know, actually, I think that's like a much better path to sort of like operating something on chain or like a protocol on chain. I think it's going to scare off a lot of people if we keep on like pushing through governance proposals and making everyone, trying to force everyone to be as involved as they can be all the time, and, you know, constantly making changes. And then all of a sudden your protocol a year from now looks completely different. Not to name names, but I think like Sushi was a great DEX. Like, you know, they had like a really good PMF, and, you know, they introduced so many things. And now I think if you were to ask even people who are like very crypto native, like, what is Sushi working on, right? It's unclear, because there's just been so many different experiments and things tried. And, you know, for a lot of these things, they could have just been like, it could have just been focused on just like growing the liquidity of like the DEX, right? Like the product that worked, right? You didn't have to keep on pushing out like new code bases and
protocols. I mean, that's like the ye who slay dragons type thing. It's like, and I think Sushi is kind of, will be a case study. It certainly is something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, of like the pitfalls of an on-chain entity at first not having enough structure, then pivoting too much towards structure, fighting against something traditional, and then embracing some of the parts of these traditional systems that end up being the most like toxic and destructive, right? Like, there is something to be said for like, well, if you can just make a good product and you can take it to this point, then that is so much more valuable than, you know, burning cash and burning staff and on these pursuits that maybe don't work. Not in any way to bash the Sushi team. I just think it is one of those moments that, like, looking back, I love Maki. I was early Sushi fan. I do think it is just one of those things that we can look back on and go, like, that was not the strat, right? Like that was not the way, which is sad, you know, because if like you say, if they'd kind of stuck to that course, we would probably be having a very different conversation right now.
But also, I also love sushi. Like I brought them up because I love them. And I don't think it's like over for them by any means. Right. But, the thing is, the reason I bring it up is because this is how every DAO operates in my experience, right? Everyone is trying to actually, like, you know, change, like, maybe one or two things to how sushi operated, but everyone ends up, like, going towards this path, right? Like, even the ones who integrate governor, like, on-chain governance, right? Like, there's on-chain governance, but then there's, like, councils, right? And then, like, you go through a market downturn, and all of a sudden your token supply is like super concentrated. And then at that point, it's like, why is there even a DAO, right? Like, why should there even be any more decisions? I guess like everyone who was convicted in your protocol stuck it out with you because they love what there is right now, right? Like it really baffles me when there's like a crypto project that gets released and then like you see people are bullish on it for the team, right? It's like, that never made any sense to me, right? It's like you probably shouldn't be bullish on the team because like actually I don't see a future where like we don't all have like a roadmap to immutability, right? I think like next cycle, like when DeFi projects launch, like that's going to be everyone's goal, right? So like more people should be like building around or more people should be like focused on like what is like the core product we have here, and do you think this will be like, you know, something that'll be valuable, something that like people will integrate into their protocols, right? Do you think this is like a like another Web2 analogy? Like, do you think this is like an SDK, for example, that like people will like integrate, or like an API that people will like put into their platform in the future, right? And if it is, like, do we need to be doing all of this stuff, like constantly pushing, you know, upgrades and stuff, right?
I think there's a concern to some extent, and I won't claim that like older style legacy businesses, like, you know, people are going to have like their grift, they're in it for money or whatever personal reasons, but I think some of the fear, and even on people working in such immutable products in the industry, is like, once it's out there, it's out there. And so while it's great if you have like something that is a completely solid product, like fully ready to go, it doesn't need to be touched any further, I think there is always the concern of, all right, well, what if there are methods that malicious actors can take advantage of that we didn't think of when we launched it? And I think that's you know, the whole Dark Forest thing, or even Vitalik's tweet, like, Ethereum is neutral, but I am not. Like, platforms, protocols, anything that is truly neutral means it can be used for both good and bad purposes. And so I think there's a concern. I think people have a right to be concerned or very skeptical, or like, you know, once you launch it, like you have to have it completely solid and ready to go. And I think maybe that's why people put paths for upgradability in place, just in case something happens that they weren't prepared for.
Right, right. I mean, Bitcoin had this issue, right? When Bitcoin first launched, right, there was a double spend issue, right? And it got patched, right? Like, I just don't think that like we need to be constantly making like little like itty bitty upgrades and telling everyone about them and making announcements for them and all this sort of stuff all the time, right? Like, I think if there is like a core flaw in the project, right, or someone has come along and made your protocol completely irrelevant, then I think like there should be like not an upgrade, but like a migration or of some sorts, right? Like, major upgrades I don't think are like the worst idea, right? But do we need to like every single week be pushing through like a small little fix, and then at the end of the year, like, it doesn't look the same, right? Like, that's kind of what I mean, right?
What is that? That's the ship of Theseus, right? Like, the idea of we're building this thing, and over time, every single plank and board and rope has been replaced. Is it the same ship that we started with? And I think for a lot of DeFi protocols, the answer is just no.
Right, right. Not so I guess immutability isn't the right word, hey? Like, I think when you say immutability, people think, like, no more upgrades and stuff, right? But, I mean, I consider Bitcoin to be immutable, and there still can be, like, if there is an issue, like, something can be fixed, right? Like, it's a pain in the ass, but there is a path to, like, fixing things in an immutable system.
Not to pivot too much, but this is something that kind of stuck out with me when we were thinking of what to talk about, and you kind of alluded to, and like the idea of, you know, what you build towards, you know, when I feel like when Redacted first came on everybody's radar, right? And where, when everybody, you know, started seeing the posts and started seeing, you know, the iconography and everything, and this kind of carries over into New Order as well. Like there was like this very distinct designed visual style, right? Like very Cicada 3301, very like it looked visually distinct from other projects and other DAOs and certainly other things on crypto, right? It really had this like tactile feel, be it like the designs of ripped paper or redacted words, or even like the kind of streetwear aesthetic, or like I said, 3301 Cicada aesthetic. Like how much of that was deliberate? Like how much time did you guys spend like really crafting that image and crafting that narrative?
Right. So I think when we were building the Redacted project, I think like we recognized the end goal of it was to sort of create this liquidity engine, right? What it is, it's still a work in progress, right? Like, well, I mean, it's not a work in progress. We know sort of what we're building towards, but we imagined it to be less of like a user-facing protocol and more something that is like very DAO native that like crypto projects can integrate with to like increase the liquidity of their token or the liquidity of their platform, right? And then when we sort of came to that as sort of like the North Star, right? Sort of something that everyone integrates into their DAO, we recognize that, you know, because we are like a very crypto native application, we can be a bit more like flexible and fun with the branding, right? And I don't think this is like to say like every project should like sort of be as like out there as like we are, but at the same time, you know, like it, like Redacted isn't a success if like we get into like your mom and dad's like wallet or something, right? Like for us, like what the end goal looks like, what the success looks like is like, you know, everyone has sort of Redacted integrated into their DApp, right? And then all of a sudden you're using our smart contracts without even recognizing them, right? And we sort of already got there with some of the stuff we're doing with like Aura and stuff now, right? Like there's a lot of projects. I feel like a lot of the big projects launching now are just using one of our products called like Hidden Hand. And for some people, they don't even know they're using it, right? Because there's auto compounders and stuff like that for their token. So yeah, I mean, when we recognized like that's sort of the path we want to go down, it meant that we could be a bit more creative. And when I say like creative, I mean that in the sense that we could tailor ourselves to, I guess, like knowing what like CT likes, right? And I like it was kind of obvious like CT would like something like that in hindsight, right? But you know, I don't think it's like the best idea for like a lot of projects to like go as extreme as we did.
I think anything that's like obvious in hindsight means that it's like brilliant in the moment, right? Like I certainly remember the first time I saw just like, you know, one of the like, looks like a piece of paper, things are blacked out. There's this, the symbol of the butterfly, and it's in the sea of these either, you know, like everything looks like a fucking neon Solana project, or everything looks like that, you know, insufferable Instagram style, like flat art, you know, I forget there's a term for it, but it's like the super cringe millennial style. And it really stood out. It was immediately evocative to me. And I think because it spoke, like you said, to CT, it spoke the language of the old internet, right? Like it spoke the idea of kind of like ARGs. It spoke to like the idea of like these of like hidden shadowy cabals, like, or like cartels. Like it spoke the language, I think, in a way that was more effective than anyone else. And kind of at that point, like, I know I'm kind of going back on what I said, like a good product is a good product, but like the product even didn't have to be good. Like the branding was immediately so appealing to people.
But you know that, like you mentioned, like the Solana style branding, right? It's like a really interesting problem, because like the thing is, I think a lot of people would do something that's like really on brand, like I guess like what the Solana styles did, right? Like that's kind of like what the fintech projects were doing, right? And you know, I don't blame those projects for going down that path, right? Like for some people, like their end goal is to be in like, you know, like everyone's wallet, right? Or for example, like on everyone's phone and stuff, right? And be like really easy to like interact with and be user friendly, right? And in that sense, like, you know, it's no different from Fang, right? I guess like Apple came out with this like minimalistic style, and then everyone sort of strived towards, like, you know, being minimalistic, and then it just became a trend, right? Because that's what the users were doing, right? Maybe we're so sick of it because we see it every day, right? But for the odd chance that, like, one of those projects, like, does get on the radar of someone who is, like, sick of their mobile bank or something, like, I don't think they'll get sick of it, right? But perhaps to us, like, we're tired of it because we see it every day.
It's been around long enough that it's time for change, basically.
That's definitely true, right? But then you can easily tell, I guess, like, when people are just, like, grifting and, you know, stealing stuff from other people, right? Like, I think the only one who's, like, really executed that brand well and, like, evolved it is, like, maybe, like, Aave, right? Everyone still thinks Aave is really cool, but in many ways, like, it's not actually too different from a branding perspective of, like, these things we're also sick of, right? So...
And I think, you know, also certainly that's probably from a deliberate view. I mean, you look at probably the market they want to capture is the TradFi Web2 market that comes in and wants access to, you know, some exposure to DeFi or some exposure to lending. So I'm sure, like, you know, Trojan horsing your protocol to look like something that people are familiar with, I'm sure that's, like, effective, yeah. as it also is deliberate.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, I think, like, a lot of these, like, choices people are making from, like, comms and stuff is definitely like a Trojan horse because it can be intimidating, right? Like, you know, like I said before, like, we didn't go down that path because we sort of knew who we were building for, right? But yeah, I mean, I think there is, like, you know, when you introduce something as, like, intimidating as, you know, like, self-custody, right? Like, you do probably have to make certain sacrifices when it comes to things like branding and doing stuff like that, right?
For sure. And that brings up an interesting point, because I wanted to cycle back to we've seen a lot of centralized entities kind of implode between all these lending entities like 3AC and other. And I don't know how much that's hampering, like, adoption or onboarding, in the sense of people being in general extremely skeptical of the industry as a whole. Whereas, was it Arthur Hayes? Came out with a blog post, like, a couple days ago or whatever, talking about, like, oh yeah, here's centralized finance, here's DeFi. One of these have imploded based on recent events, and one of them has not. And I don't know why people are talking about that DeFi hasn't. So, you know, keeping in line with onboarding people for things like self-custody and through decentralized finances, it just seems like another point of struggle.
Definitely. I don't think, you know, I try not to, like, yeah, like, if I don't have, like, an opinion on something yet, I try not to, like, speak on it. And, like, I'm still trying to see on, like, how this changes, I guess, onboarding, right? Like, all these implosions. I mean, it's definitely evident in, like, prices and stuff, right? But, I guess, like, you know, we had, like, Mt. Gox, right? Like, can't get worse than that, right? Like,
well, now it can, because you said that out loud on this podcast. Yeah. So now we're, like, fully jinxed. It's all going to zero. Something way worse is going to happen.
You know, like, another thing sometimes, like, I try and work up when I do, so sometimes for, like, New Order and stuff, we do, like, thesis work also, right? I think, like, everyone's, like, so, like, people would agree with it, people would disagree with it, because I think a lot of people think really short term. And you say something like, you can in, like, the modern crypto realm, like, build something that's, like, way in the future and is not necessarily, like, tailored to institutional capital. I think, like, people get really mad at that, because everyone says, what do you mean you're not tailored towards, like, institutional capital, right? And I think it's completely okay for you as a project to, like, work off the mindset that, we're building for, like, the next generation, right? I have, like, a very strong conviction that majority of kids growing up after this cycle will have a MetaMask before they have a bank account, right? And I think that's dope as fuck, and we should, like, embrace that, right? And, like, knowing that there will be a lot of people that are coming into the finance realm that probably will be more familiar with how, like, Ethereum works than the traditional banking system is a huge opportunity, right? Which means that we can, you know, like, not be so so scared all the time, right? Like, like, so scared that, like, institutions are, like, scared away from crypto or something, right? Because We have like done like really good work like this cycle in terms of like, you know, making something that like people enjoy, right? People do enjoy it, like, you know. The thing of like using DeFi is like very enjoyable for a lot of people.
I think, well, first of all, V, we definitely have the teaser and headline for the episode right there, is the next generation will have MetaMask before they have a bank account. That is a banger right there. And that kind of like goes into like what you just said, like enjoyable is an interesting term for me, right? No one probably says that they have an enjoyable time in any traditional, banking system. Like nobody loves, and I love it when you get those prompts on iPhone or whatever, like, tell us if you love the Chase app. It's like, motherfucker, no one loves the Chase app.
Yeah, it sucks,
right? So I would ask, like, you, the use of that term enjoyment, you know, seems kind of refreshing, particularly people who are just in it for the money or just in it for the tech, like, focusing in on that term enjoyment, wanting your money or the movement of money or how we make gains or how we trade, whatever, to be enjoyable. I think that's like a really key thing that you've touched on there. And I think that's really supported by like by your branding, by this idea of immutability. Like it should be enjoyable, right? It shouldn't be like this at best, like benign, terrible techno capitalist thing. And it shouldn't at the worst be like this grueling app experience that doesn't work, right? So yeah, I mean, why do you feel that importance on things being enjoyable?
I think it's because from what I've seen, right? Everyone who has sort of come on chain so far or has made that leap of like, you know, not using centralized exchanges, it's happening like earlier than expected, I think, for a lot of people. And you could also point it to the same reason, right? That like, you know, like a lot of the, like probably like a lot of people would rather use Uniswap because there is a bit of, you know, gamification has been like, it's like such a buzzword now, right? But at the same time, like there is a bit of a gamified aspect to using a fucking unicorn, like a unicorn on a website to like, you know, exchange coins and stuff. And I think that is like a big reason why like it is like way less intimidating for people to like, you know, get onboarded and start with something like Uniswap, even if the UI sucks, right? compared to something like Coinbase or something so boomer, right? Like, you know, people really don't like this, like, you know, like, I think like people don't like the fact that it's like centralized, but at the same time, like people don't like that it is not like a fun experience, right? Like I think for a lot of people, like they hate even thinking about like banking, right? And like, you know, investing and making money and stuff like that, right? And for us to like have created something where we've made like the whole industry of finance like a very enjoyable, fun experience and so experimental at the same time too, is like a huge catalyst that I don't think like a lot of people like really give respect to.
Okay, so this is the real GameFi then, right here. GameFi.
There was like that meme a while ago that was like exchanges should have a sound effect when you crank up the leverage slider, right? Like there is the opportunity for it. And I feel like maybe if it were the detriment a few years ago, you know, back when everyone was doing food themed farms or you know whatever that sushi, you know, ended up coming out of, you know, that seemed, oh, this is a fundamentally unserious thing, and people said whatever. I think there is this space that can exist, and it kind of goes to what you said, Sammy. Like, you know, it's great if people want to play for like the broad institutional capital, is like you know, institutional capital and money, but there still should be a place that for things that aren't that. And I think there's something really admirable in being like, well, our thing looks the way it does because we find it appealing and we think it's fun and it's a product for people that appreciate that. There is, you know, a great power in not trying to be everybody's everything, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people just should like recognize that like one of the reasons that the food farms did take off was because people enjoyed it. People love that, right? You know, like what are you going to say? Like it's the truth, right? Maybe you don't enjoy it and like that's totally cool, right? Then you should not do that, right? Like there's a fundamental flaw with the product and like what they were doing, right? But from at least like a design and like at least like positioning standpoint, right? Like they work, like they were like a huge, huge success, right? the fact that people would rather put their money into a dog coin than like an ETF. right?
There, there it is. I mean, that's it right there, right?
Yeah. It says something, right? And that doesn't mean that, like, we should launch scams. I'm not saying that at all, right? I'm just saying that, like the fact that people would rather do that, right? Because people aren't technically aware of, like, what's going on, I guess, behind the scenes, right? But that, yeah, I mean, it speaks really loud, right? It's, like, very loud. And I'm sure a lot of people have, like, noticed that by now. Or you'd at least hope so, right?
I mean, I guess, you know,
not to interrupt you, like, I guess, like, I'll just, like, tag that along by saying, like, I think, like, when the first wave of DeFi, like, the first DeFi summer, like, when it was, like, synthetics and compound, like, even when I was, like, noticing it, I think everyone had this mentality of, like, this is going to replace TradFi, right? And I think it's actually a much better mindset to build alternatives to TradFi than, like, replacements, right? There'll be a lot of things that get in our way if we try and build replacements to TradFi, right? Or, like, take the whole world on chain, right? But if you can build alternatives that are, like, appealing to those who choose not to opt into, like, the traditional banking system, then I think we have just as big of a TAM, if not bigger, than, like, what TradFi is appealing to right now.
I mean, that's pretty much what I was going to ask. Like, I feel like so many people in the space talk about, like, the wholesale replacement of the traditional financial system in these very big, broad terms that are poorly defined. And I think, like, yeah, to your point, there is something much more, not just realistic, but probably, like, fulfilling and just as, you know, say, profitable or successful in building something that is alternative or complementary or sits aside and separately from traditional finance, like what you're building right now, right? Like, I think anybody who is like, we are going to destroy all banks within one generation is probably not right on. But the more interesting question is, right, like, how do we get all these people who are dissatisfied from banks and dissatisfied with interest rates and dissatisfied with investing to try something new? And that seems much more feasible and much more actionable to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said this to my team also, right? Like, I think one way we try to think about it at Redacted was, you know, I mentioned earlier, like, we try to be a bit more, like, DAO-facing and integration-focused than we are, like, user-facing, right? And one way I put it to them was, I know for a fact there's a bunch of DAOs that do not want to work with traditional market makers and people who help bootstrap liquidity and stuff. I know that for, like, a fact, right? And Redacted is in, like, this super interesting position where we're sort of, like, you know, like, liquidity as a service, right? And we gamified it. Like, we made it fun. We made it, like, smart contract focused. We made it on chain. And just be like, that doesn't mean we're trying to, like, kill the market makers, right? It just means that we've built an alternative for those who, like, you know, do not want to go down the path of, like, dealing with boomers, essentially, right? For lack of a better word.
I mean, I wonder, like, you know, generationally things will be different, but, you know, you have to wonder, like, at a certain point, okay, you know, boomers are not going to be our concern. They're never going to come over. I think it's much more maybe about trying to get that skeptical, right? Like, younger generations. I feel like in between the gap of Gen Z, who is, like, already crypto native, every like nephew or whatever I have has a MetaMask wallet and buys NFTs at their middle school or high school during class. I think there is, like, this, you know, very pernicious base of, you know, like, millennials, people, or people in between the boomer and the Gen Z, who harbor this kind of, like, I don't know another word for it, like, brainwashed hatred of crypto, or who just, you know, have this, like, kind of blanket, whatever justification for not liking it. Which, you know, part of me wants to be like, is like, well, that's just cope because you missed the boat at some point and you're young enough to realize that you probably could have been in this space. But, you know, how do you think we win over those people? If we were talking about, like, undecided voters, like, you know, the boomers are, they're not coming along. We've already got the young kids in hand. Like, how do you get those, like, you know, like, 30-year-old, 26-year-old Disney adults to care?
Yeah. I think, like, okay, another thing I'll say about, like, the boomers and stuff too is, right, I love how we just, like, classified them as, like, boomers, if not, like, they're, like, the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah. I mean,
like, one thing I'll say about them is that one thing that they're famous for is following trends, right? And building things that building things or tapping into markets that younger generations like have shown a lot of interest in, right? And if we are successful in onboarding them rather than focusing on them first, right? If we are able to like demonstrate to them that like there is like a demand for this sort of like approach to tackling finance through on-chain and through DeFi and stuff, then they will like be forced to come actually. Like that is what will make them forced buyers or forced participants. If we can show them the PMF is with like the next generation of people that they want onboarded onto their platform, right? That's more on the liquidity side. Like back to your question though, is like, I've also like have not formed like a really good opinion on it because it, to me, it just doesn't make any sense, right? Like, you know, it is not, you know, there is things that they do have a point on, which we as like an industry like choose to ignore. Like there is like definitely like environmental concerns, right? If we all know what like Ethereum is going to become, right? And like, if it was to stick to the POW model, like that is like a very big issue, right? And like we all choose as an industry to like ignore that. But then there's things that are like POS, right? Which like completely fix the issue, right? That like these, like the people are so skeptical about NFTs on. I'm talking more about like environmental issues. And that's like a big reason like people don't like NFTs. And to me, it was like, to me, like I haven't really said like, okay, like just because we're moving to POS, it fixes it. Because you can't even explain POW or POS to these people and the difference between them. So it's been like an interesting thing to talk about, right? Because a lot of the solutions we have to the things that people hate about crypto are like not explainable to them because they refuse to either put the effort in to learn or educate themselves, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the argument also like, well, how can we talk about, you know, proof of work while there are still private planes and the factory farm industry and, you know, any number of, you know, it just seems like, you know, a convenient excuse for people who choose not to engage with it.
To quote a normie friend of mine. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I just haven't wrapped my head around, like, how we get over that specific, like, user group as an industry yet.
Yeah, to quote, for lack of a better term, I hate using the term normie sometimes, but to quote a non-crypto friend of mine, directly, he said, I'm not interested in anything that burns down rainforests for shitty art.
Which, in fairness, that is, I co-sign that entirely. I think it would be, you know, such a stretch to be like, the bored apes are destroying the Amazon when, you know, like, logging companies are sending death squads into like fight, kill indigenous people. And, you know, I mean, it is like one of those, I think, like very American specific mindsets of being willing to swallow any evil that benefits you directly. And then anything that you don't understand, immediately putting all of the blame on that. It's the same thing with, I don't know, money laundering. It's the same thing with, you know, yeah, pretty much anything else. Or you want to talk about risk. I mean, like, people can talk about firms blowing up all they want, but go back and look at Lehman on a 37 times leverage. You know, it's like that. If you're not engaged with it, then you feel like it's bad and it's not working for you. But if your Amazon package gets there overnight and like two people had to die of kidney infections on the line to get it there, then you're like, well, whatever.
The further abstracted away the problem is, the more you can justify it. No, it's fine. I don't have to think about it. But to some degree, it's like case of my friend. It's like, I think there's an extent for some people you have to give up. It's like they're so far gone, for lack of better phrasing, that there's no point in attempting to engage. Well, and then some of it too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say some of it too is the extent of media perception. You know, like the Web3 is going great website, or even, you know, they're my parents are boomers, but they even reached out. I guess they caught wind of like either the Celsius or the Terra ecosystem implosion, and both of them reached out to me like very concerned on a phone call. Are you okay? Are you? Because this looks really bad. It looks like it's all scams, and we want to make sure you're doing okay.
I think everyone's parents reached out to them about the Terra situation.
Yeah,
that was not a great look around. I feel like there was some uncomfortable conversations that week had with parents. I mean, you know, the my standard thing to that is I'm like, well, how's the S&P 500 doing? You know, I mean, not that it's the same, but I feel like, you know, anyone who is involved in the ecosystem gets called on pretty regularly to be a defender. And if you flip that, you know, you don't ask every, I don't know, vegetarian to defend what kind of migrant labor is being exploited to make their fruit, right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, there is a fallacy there of like, just because you're involved with something, you somehow have to be the like sin cake eater for all of it.
And you know, what's interesting is that like one thing that happened, actually, like this is something that's been around in crypto forever, is that like all projects feel the need to be like very headline chasing and be very like, you know, make sure everyone knows about them, right? Like we all do this like guerrilla marketing, and it ended up coming full circle and being like super unsustainable because we like basically like knew we were pushing tech that was like not ready for retail onto these people, right? And we basically manifested it, to be honest, like something like Anchor, right? The way that we like grow our projects, like we basically manifested something like Anchor to like come about onto retail, right? It got to a stage where we were literally calling them like savings accounts, right? Because it would get people's deposits. And, you know, and then in that same vein, think about how like the media companies work, and knowing that like you can get a lot of people to like click on your profile and make your business successful by giving them, you know, they go for, I guess, like more of like a fear mongering tactic, right? But like, it's not too different actually from like what we do as an industry of like trying to make things like so visually appealing and, you know, like all these partnership announcements every day and just like anything we can do to get people to click on our DApp, right? They do the same thing, right? And it's something to like learn and like, you know, just rebuild around, right? Like the fact that like if we give them something to like fear monger around, then they will definitely do that, right? And at least we can hope that like the next generation of like these type of people that like fall for these type of things can be like a bit more educated, or if we can just like simply disprove some things like the educational stuff or like the fact that like, you know, Terra was a scam or something, right?
There's no such thing as bad press, right? But I think so much of it too is just straight reactionary in the sense of, all right, there's enough bad stuff. There's enough bad actors. There's enough failed protocols, things that we just need to either completely ban it, shut it down, eradicate it, or regulate the hell out of it is the two kind of reactionary approaches I've seen from folks.
And I wonder like what like we will do. You know, I wonder like what the approach people will take is, because it's crazy to think like next cycle there won't be even more scams than there was than this one, right? And it feels like next cycle like will be, I know I just said like all the stuff about not being institutional focused, but an easy thing to bet around would be like next having there's like some major family offices or major banks that like do end up like buying Bitcoin and that kicking off like a next rally. I don't think that's like a crazy guess. I think that's like probably the most predictable one. And then what happens is like a lot of people that were sort of tailoring to those type of markets like perform like an attack, right, on something like Tether, right? Like they've been doing forever, right? Like someone opening a massive short and quite literally sending like USDT down, right? Like, and what it'll come back on us is like, you know, because these guys sort of have, not to wear my tinfoil hat, but like, because these guys sort of have like the lobbying powers and stuff, using that as like an angle against like our industry, right?
For sure. It's definitely going to be like a really big concern.
It's something that we haven't even faced yet, right? Like people think it happened to Terra. It could be either, or it could have just been, honestly, like the system was so unstable that it could have just been a whale, right? That just kicked off the whole thing.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
But I think like next cycle, it's something that we haven't even thought about is like quite like liquidity attacks, right? Like on like the industry, right?
So Sammy, I mean, all of this like governance talk and like big brain talk and institutional talk, that's all bullshit. People don't care about that at all. That's not what the people are here to hear. I was going to say here to see. The real questions now for you. First of all, this is incredibly important. What is your favorite anime of all time?
I feel like It's like a very hard question. I only got into anime recently. Okay, I have to think about this. Let's ask another question.
We'll circle back to that one. I will say, you know, as somebody who has loved anime for a long time, I am still consistently shocked about the variability of people on this side of Twitter who are kind of like, yeah, I only got into anime a little bit ago. Well, here's one that might be easier. Who is like one of your favorite posters on Twitter? Like, who do you have notifications on every time you see one of their tweets? It like makes you smile. Like, who do you just love to USDC see on the timeline?
USDC Bull. That's my new favorite Twitter account.
Now, well, here's the real question then. Do you know who USDC Bull is? You don't have to tell us, but if you know, just say yes or no.
I don't.
Okay. Are you sure?
I don't. No, I don't.
Is it you?
No, it's not me.
All right. Well,
we're not doing the interrogation pod here. We haven't.
Remember, I kept on sharing USDC Bull's Twitter post, and then like Noah made some rumor that I was USDC Bull.
I was at a work conference, and somebody was playing a game of bowling with the name USDC Bull, and I was convinced for 2 seconds that I had caught them. I was like, "This is it. I know who you are." Turns out to be a false alarm.
Yeah, it might just be like the Circle Foundation.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, the call is coming from inside the house for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Chainlink got it. You remember how good that account was, and then now it's just like clearly run by Chainlink.
Yeah, I mean it's just you want to talk about the hidden hand, the not so hidden hand being very clear. Who do you think is like criminally underrated on Twitter? Like, who would you want to follow or boost if you possibly could?
Is it like someone? Oh, I'm gonna shout out like one of the guys who just joined the New Order team. Like, this guy is like the biggest, like one of the biggest Giga Brains like I've worked with. And like another great example of like onboarding people into crypto is DeFi_DREJ. He was like a quant. He's docked, so I'll give his like. He was like a quant at like one of the big trading desks, like here in Toronto, and then he decided to make the move over to crypto because he thought that shit was lame and for boomers, right? And loved how like experimental everything was, and you know, got in touch with us and made the jump. And he's bringing all of the knowledge he has from like his industry over, and like, you know, New Order is more of like an incubator. Like, some of the stuff like we're working on in terms of like ideas, like it's crazy, like, you know, when you bring like fresh minds into the space. And like I've like convinced him to like start posting on Twitter more, so like that's going to be that'll be a fun one to follow.
I'm debating whether I want to ask a question that was kind of suggested based on some other guests. What would you say is an unusual how best to phrase this question? What's an unusual like food opinion or food take you have? Like, what's a food that you like or dislike that might not be common?
I recently found out that like not everyone likes poutine, which is crazy to me because I'm Canadian. I started like traveling recently, and I just thought like poutine was like this normal thing, right? And like everyone had it everywhere, like, you know, you could upgrade your fries to poutine. And then I found out, like, I was explaining it to people, I'm like, yeah, it's fries with gravy and cheese curds, and people thought it was like the weirdest thing, like, to this day when I talk to people who aren't from Canada, and I found that really weird. That's the end of the
question. I mean, I will say, I think poutine is hit or miss for me, but in terms of like a food when you're very drunk, I think it is almost unmatched. It is so like, it feels like a drunk Canadian person stumbling around in the wilderness trapping for beavers or whatever.
Yeah.
Invented it. Like, it is drunk person food.
Yeah. You wouldn't want it any different.
Very good. Yeah.
I mean, I guess on that note, do you have like a favorite drink, like a favorite cocktail? Are you a beer person? Are you a wine person?
I'm trying to quit drinking.
Respect.
Not that I, when you say it, it sounds like you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I never drank much. My favorite drink prior was Jaeger Bombs for sure.
Wow.
Yeah. I definitely like Jaeger Bombs.
I'm going to tell you something. I love Jaeger Bombs. So much. And I spent so long as like a high-end competitive bartender doing like molecular gastronomy cocktails, and I was drinking those motherfuckers all the time and people acted like I was crazy. I think it is a phenomenal beverage. I think it's so underrated. I think it's gotten co-opted in the worst way possible. I think it is like true. I truly enjoy them.
Yeah, it doesn't, it, to me, it doesn't get better than Jager Bombs, right? Like, first of all, I love Red Bull. And then you found a way to like make Red Bull get you drunk. Like, you can't ask for more, right?
I guess going off of that, did you have a particularly fun or outlandish or absolutely bizarre moment during NFT NYC if you were there?
I didn't make it out to NFT NYC.
No.
Yeah.
Well, damn, but this question looks fucking stupid.
I was in, this year I did, I was in Lisbon for a bit. I did ETH Barca or Apex Barca. That was fun. I did, that might have been the only conference I did this
year. Did you force a lot of Jager bombs on people at the conference?
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking about is like, what is something I can say to like CT that like they, I know they all hate, and they all hate Jager bombs for some reason, right? Like, yeah, like, let's order champagne and stuff at the club. I'm like, oh, pass.
Well, that's the difference of, what is it, taste and class. You know, anybody with money can order champagne. Only a real, true, genuine piece of shit can drink a ton of Jager bombs.
The real D-gen.
Yeah, I love your note that it's like, well, I love Red Bull. It's like, yeah, of course. Of course.
But you'd assume, like, everyone loves Red Bull. Like, everyone in crypto loves Red Bull. Like, you'd assume, like, Jager bomb would be the go-to choice, and then they give you weird looks. How was NFT NYC? I heard some mixed stories about it.
I would, you know, I had a lot of other work stuff going on, so I didn't get to go out to nearly as much stuff as I wanted. But it was fun. I mean, number one, you know, Midtown Manhattan is the worst food in the world. It is the fakest part of New York, and it is pretty much designed to make people from middle America who visit New York for the first time never ever want to come back. It is like truly a hell blasted like wasteland. And so that so many events were there was just like a huge bummer. Because then of course, you know, you want to drag people, you know, 35, 40 minutes away to something. People are like, no, we'll just stay around here and go eat at Applebee's for the ninth time or whatever. I do think though it was very fun just seeing how publicly embarrassing a lot of like only NFT like bros are like that. It really like, I always like hate the stereotype of like crypto bro. I find it like so reductive and exclusionary. But then, you know, you see like gangs of Bored Ape dudes and you're just like, yep, yes you are.
Yeah. I heard some people say it was really fun, and I heard some people say like that last point you mentioned, it's like it was such a reality shock about like NFT people and like the fact that there is like, you know, we like, there's probably people who don't know who like D-Gen Spartan and like, you know, like these like staples and like CTR, but they have like, but then they start talking about people, you're like, who are you talking about right now? You know? And then it's like, you seem like you're so out of the loop.
I will say it's giga cringe to hear my like appropriated Japanese username being used on me in real life. I was just like, you know what? This actually sounds bad. This sounds great. I look like I'm fresh off the anime convention, like clutching my body pillow as people like refer to me as the Japanese word for fox. So that was like a cringe experience.
There's so lame.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I was like, just call me please. Anything. I'm like, do you want my real name? I'll give you my real name if I don't have to hear this shit in real life.
Again. I remember when Redacted first launched, and I was trying to like combat fraud and shit. And like someone asked me a question and I gave them like a very normal DeFi answer, right? They're like, oh, are you going to accumulate like Toke or some shit? And I gave them an answer. I forget what I said. And then like Loopify, who's like some big like NFT person, like screenshotted it and is like, meanwhile on DeFi Twitter. And they were all like, what the fuck are they talking about? Like, I'm like, damn, like, I'm lame now. Like,
kind of, yeah, like, that realization, that moment of becoming lame is like genuinely brutal. It's when a server or a host in a restaurant called me by Kitsune, and I, you know, it's fine when it's online, but then in real life, I was like,
I'm like, that's a thing. I thought that was like what we all are on.
I thought it was normal. I will say, surprising how tall some people are. There was a lot taller people than I expected. I saw like, I never thought like I was particularly tall, but there were some people who were like gigantic. And I was like, what are you doing? You should be go play basketball, get off the computer.
Speaking about like crypto bro, like that's like a very big misconception with crypto bros is that everyone is short, but like everyone's actually really tall.
Yeah. Only people like Gainsy are short.
Okay. Yeah, I saw a couple of people that I was like, damn, like, you're short. But then I saw a couple of people like, damn, like, way bigger than I thought you'd be.
I think that was it for all the questions I have. You got anything else in the chamber?
No, I didn't really have anything specific.
All right, well, I guess, you know, you can update us on your favorite anime later. I know it's a hard decision. I know
you need... like the anime I'm watching now is like One Punch Man. So, like,
see, that's cool. That's a cool answer. People would like that answer. Maybe not of all time. You know,
I'm at right now. Like, I think I have to watch more to like form an opinion on what my favorite one is.
Yeah, just go watch Samurai Champloo or Serial Experiments Lane, and just give people that as your answer, and then you can pass in silence. I feel like Lawrence picked like a totally boomer anime from like his childhood that no one had ever heard of, and it was like shocking. Like, people were literally like, "What is this guy talking about?" So just as long as you don't do that.
Yeah. Well, rest assured, like, people are going to hear this, come to the end, hear the answer, and be like, "All right, we're gonna spam this guy on Twitter and give him our anime recommendations."
You're gonna get some my anime list drops.
Feel free to.
At the end of the show, I would say if there was any plugs, shout outs, teasers you want to make, things that you're working on or passionate about, anything that you want to announce or say, or even just send love to, now would be the perfect time.
Plug yourself.
I won't use this as like a shilling opportunity. I'll save that for another one. But this was like a really fun and refreshing podcast. I'll give you guys that. Much better than some of the other ones where they just try and like extract alpha out of you all day.
Well, yeah, we're going to do that on the next one. We're going to need your Bitcoin price target, everything that you're holding.
Market conditions.
Yeah.
Predictions.
I guess whoever's listening, you can find me on Twitter at @0xSammy_. And then you can find the projects I'm working on in my bio, the New Order and Redacted.
Well, Sammy, thank you so much for joining us. Super fun talking with you. As always, if you like the podcast, please like, subscribe, leave us a rating, and please reach out if you feel like coming on. You know, something V and I have talked about a lot is that, and certainly that we've heard from people, is that people say they have no short story to share or nothing interesting. And everybody has an interesting story, and we want to hear it, and we want to talk to you. And as you can see, like, we're fortunate that Sammy is very smart, and we had to have a smart conversation, but we're really just talking and shooting the shit. So please come and join us.